everyone. Thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's March 2019, and you're listening to episode 115 of Postmodern Realities, and it's a film review of the new film, Captain Marvel. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Corey Latta. Corey holds MAs in religion and English, as well as a PhD in 20th century literature. He is the author of several books, including Serving the Work, Reflections on Christ and Creativity, which is forthcoming later this year from Cascade Books. And he's also the co-author of Titans, How Superheroes Can Help Us Make Sense of a Polarized World. Corey has written a film review about the new Marvel Universe film called Captain Marvel. And his review is called Something to Prove, Why Captain Marvel Just Doesn't Work. And it's available free online at our website, equip.org. Corey, it's good to have you on.
Yeah, Melanie, thanks for having me.
Well, this has been somewhat of a blockbuster. It is, as of this recording, March 18th, and it's only been out for 2 weeks. And already it has earned almost $800 million at the global box office, and it's only been released for 12 days. So I'm sure it's going to clear $1 billion. And so it's needless to say, it's a very popular film. And we're going to talk about what you thought of this film. And it'll be interesting because I think you and I had a little bit different takes on the film. So right. What did you think of Captain Marvel?
So it was fun, but I did not like it as Marvel movies go. I thought it was entertaining. It was a good popcorn film. My main critique of it was that it was heavy-handed, clunky. I thought it was fairly poorly acted. And I thought more than any other Marvel movie to date, it shoehorned a kind of ideology into a very mediocre movie. So it's kind of a culmination of things as to why I wasn't crazy about it. Again, it's not that I didn't enjoy it, just as a huge fan of superhero movies and big fan of what Marvel's been doing. I did enjoy it, but I thought Marvel's worst to date.
Well, you just said a few moments ago that you think the movie is heavy-handed. So I want to ask you what you think that means. What does that mean when you say that it's heavy-handed? And why are you saying, what do you think it's being heavy-handed about in particular?
So, you know, the discussion is centered around the movie's depiction of sexuality or feminism. And let me say, like, I didn't have a problem with, so let me back up. I come into, you know, these superhero films with kind of a, not just a casual viewer's experience. I sort of stay up on these things and keep up with what's happening with Marvel Studios and keep up with the comments of, you know, Marvel executives and things like that. And I think it's pretty clear that Marvel's got an agenda in mind that would seem to fit a kind of ideological trajectory. I think they know where they're going. I think that trajectory probably is more fitting with a kind of a left-leaning ideology. For example, Kevin Feige, the head producer of Marvel, said that we, the viewers, are ready for a openly gay superhero. Like, that's a kind of a pronouncement he made. And where he thinks he's going to take part of the franchise, or at least one of the superhero stories. That's the kind of thing I have in mind when I, knowing that watching a movie like Captain Marvel, that there just seems to be a direction they're heading in. The real tilt of this movie is a strong, strong female protagonist who is fine. I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I'm a huge fan of Carol Danvers. That's the, you know, the human idea of Captain Marvel. And love movies like, you know, Wonder Woman, and I thought Marvel's done a good job of Black Widow and Scarlet Witch and these other characters. But in Captain Marvel, there seems to be a driving narrative that Carol Danvers' Captain Marvel is going to be a character who defines herself in opposition to and against a pretty undefined, ambiguous patriarchy, that a lot of her energy is spent kind of proving herself to, you know, these male authority figures and these male voices that have seemingly held her down at every turn. That's kind of the way the movie, in terms of her narrative, is she's done nothing but prove herself against patriarchal opposition. So the movie seems to be felt just, we can go into details here, felt so intent on pushing that theme that it just lacked, it was kind of artless. It just lacked nuance and lacked sophistication. I don't know, people kind of, you know, balk at the idea of sophistication in a superhero film. Just what you pointed out earlier, this is a blockbuster and we're not trying to do, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis isn't starring in this thing. At the same time, there are, even in Marvel's history, there are a number of films that are just really well done with nuanced, complex characters and themes that are fairly sophisticated. And Marvel, Captain Marvel, just was not one of those films.
Well, one of the things that you critique is that you say that the movie promotes, you know, secular feminism. And I will say for our listeners that when I saw the film, there isn't, you know, Corey just mentioned some things that the executive producer is thinking about going to explore in the future. But in this particular film, there's nothing with sexuality at all. And sometimes I associate some of those overt statements about female sexuality as part of secular feminism. So I didn't get that vibe necessarily. And it's true, while Daniel Day-Lewis isn't in the film, you know, the main actress that's playing Captain Marvel is Brie Larson, who is an Academy Award winning actress. Yeah. So I didn't feel that her, you know, it's true that most superhero films don't have the most intellectual dialogue, but I didn't feel like the acting, you know, just in terms of technical things, I didn't feel like her acting was flat. But I do think that while this movie isn't as good as, I would say, Black Panther, the last major kind of thought piece, you know, that the Marvel Universe kind of put out last year, I didn't feel like this is the best Marvel movie ever, but I didn't think, maybe perhaps in contrast to your view, that it was as poor as you thought it was. But I do want to explore this whole idea about the critique that you have about how it's promoting feminism.
Yeah, sure. You're absolutely right. We'll circle back around. Brie Larson is phenomenal. I mean, when I heard she was cast as Carol Danvers / Captain Marvel, I was elated. Her movie Room, for which she won the Oscar, is brilliant. I mean, it is complex and just has so much pathos in it. It's really a great performance. That, to me, that was not the same Brie Larson that I saw in this movie. And I think it's probably due to the writing. Most all of her lines in this film are kind of snarky. There's not a lot of sincerity to her as a character, which is a really sad contrast if you know the comic version of Carol Danvers. She doesn't just, you know, she's a witty person, but she doesn't just fire off these defensive, almost dismissive, half-hearted. At times it felt like she had teenage angst about her, which is just not how she's depicted in the comic books. But I think a lot of the acting, or at least my problem with it, was probably due to the writing. I just don't think she had a lot to work with. I don't think the movie is very well written.
One thing I want to tell our listeners too, just before we continue talking about the film, is that some people who aren't Marvel fans or they aren't familiar with the comic books, which I had no idea. I wasn't even sure why is Captain Marvel. I assumed that was maybe a male character, but in the comics itself, Captain Marvel is a title worn by various individuals, including this particular character in this movie, who is a former U.S. Air Force pilot named Carol Danvers. So I just want to kind of give that as backdrop. But I'd like to hear more about why you think that this was kind of pushing a feminist agenda.
Right. So take something like I contrasted her in the review to the two other most prominent female figures in the MCU at this point, Black Widow and Scarlet Witch. And really, you can look at Wonder Woman, which was, you know, DC's biggest hit in terms of box office numbers and just critical reception, obviously featuring a strong female lead. What makes any idea or any theme artful or artless is how forcibly it has to be introduced and maintained through the film. If a character represents an ideal, and clearly there's no arguing that Carol Danvers represents a feminist ideal. That's who she is. I mean, she is this woman who has sort of defied the odds and climbed the ranks and, as I alluded to in the title, proven something or tried to prove something to her naysayers and detractors and, again, mostly all men. But if you have to create a character whose identity is formed in opposition almost purely to other forces, you know, some kind of imperial patriarchy, or there's flashbacks in the movie of, you know, there's no father figure to her in the film. She kind of has this maternal role model played by, you know, Annette Bening, who becomes a Supreme Intelligence, who depicts the Supreme Intelligence, but there's no father figure in the film. You get one flashback when she was a kid riding go-karts, and her seems to be her dad comes up to her and shames her, like, what the heck are you doing out here? You don't belong out there and all that stuff. And then she's mentored by Jude Law's character, Jon Rogg. And with him, it's the same thing. She spends her entire emotional and physical and relational capital against these, you know, men who are both actual and fictitious, like the sort of men she carries in memory that aren't there anymore and men she's actually around with. So everything about her becomes a matter of exerting negative energy. Apart from that, I don't know who she is. And that's the kind of shoehorned ideology I'm talking about. A character cannot be defined solely by the opposition they maintain against, you know, any other character or figure or institution or idea. And the way she's posed, poised and pitted against the patriarchy, if she's not, I say in the review, if she's not sort of, snarkily defying some male figure, she's probably not saying a whole lot in the movie. I mean, that's kind of the central, that is the locus of her character, and her character development doesn't really go higher than that ceiling. It's not a matter of having, contrast that to Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman's a character with a deep mythology who is going on a kind of inner journey, discovering who she is. And Captain Marvel goes on a bit of that at the end, but it really just comes down to a sense of, hey, you've been holding me down. I've been trying to prove myself to you. There's this line where she says, I've been fighting with one hand tied behind my back. I don't even know what that other hand, the restrained hand means, her emotions, I guess. That seems to be kind of the way they depict it, is that she's been suppressed emotionally and now she's going to kind of come out in emotional volatility, and that's what gives her power, which is also not quite keeping with the comics at all. But Wonder Woman is a character who goes into herself, has all kinds of tortured, really, understandings of herself and the world, and comes to maturity against, I mean, there's opposition, certainly, against, if you remember the film, against Ares, the god of war, and all that. But her existence is much like anyone's. She has resistance on kind of every side. There are questions she's contending with, and demons she's battling, and forces she's fighting against that don't just represent some sort of monolithic notion of maleness or manhood or male suppression or oppression or anything like that. And I think the story is just much, much better written. The theme of, you know, feminism, which is this idea of, and Captain Marvel is another problem I have with it. It's not feminism in the sense that, hey, we're equal and we want to be seen and heard and given voice and we want to belong and we want to matter. It's the idea that we are held down and truly in nature sort of superior to. I mean, Kevin Feige, the executive producer at Marvel, has said that she's going to be going forward the most powerful Avenger in all future Avenger films. Like, she's going to be the pinnacle from this point forward. That's not how. I mean, even given the way the comics have run, she's certainly, in terms of her powers, at the top of the heap. But there's never this notion of her being the most, you know, absolutely hands-down powerful Avenger among all the Avengers. And yet, that seems to be where they're headed because of an ideology, not because of necessarily the power she maintains. And that's the kind of shoehorning that I see in the film, that the MCU and Marvel seems to be trying to establish a kind of femininity defined by its suppression or repression or oppression from the patriarchy. And everything about it, every theme, every line, every scene goes in that very predictable direction. So when you get to that last fight between her and her old mentor, Jan Rog. And this is, if listeners read the review, this won't come as much a surprise. I'm assuming they maybe have seen the movie by now. But there's this line that's at the beginning of the film and comes up again at the end. I have nothing to prove to you is the idea. And that, 5 minutes in, that the movie's headed there. There is no surprise. It is completely predictable that this journey is about proving herself against not just evil, because evil's pretty, there's a sort of a plot twist in the movie that kind of, repositions the viewer's experience to evil. So it's not just her opposition to evil, or it's really her opposition just to men. Her opposition to men who have held her down. So that whole, I've got nothing to prove to you, you could see coming from a mile away. There is a kind of conventional arc to superhero films, but they should never be so conventional to where I can predict exactly what it is that the heroine or the hero is going to say by the time we get to the end of there. At that point, you've become quiche and cliche and all that. So yeah, I think it's a feminism that is just done poorly. It's not that I have a problem with feminism or female empowerment or female equality or anything like that. It's that I have a problem with how artless and predictable and one-dimensional it seems to be.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Corey Latta, and Corey has written a film review about the new Marvel Universe film entitled Captain Marvel, and his review is called Something to Prove, Why Captain Marvel Just Doesn't Work, and it's available free online at our website, equip.org. Also, we'd like to invite you to subscribe to our journal. A 6-issue subscription is $33.50, and to subscribe online, visit equip.org, and your subscription to our journal helps us provide this additional free content like many of our film reviews. You were just talking about feminism as portrayed and as you define as female empowerment in this movie. And you mentioned briefly just Wonder Woman, and I want to know, just kind of go back to that comment, is what kind of difference you see between Captain Marvel, this film, and maybe the kind of female empowerment that was, part of the Wonder Woman film. And for our listeners, we did have a film review on Wonder Woman that you can find at our website, equip.org. But I also wanted to just say, in terms of like origins, the difference that I see is Wonder Woman was actually like a superhuman, Amazonian, or she was part of this special race. And then she went and, became this superhero and so forth. But the difference I kind of liken Captain Marvel, and I don't really know that much about the Marvel Universe. I will say I've only seen a few Marvel movies and I've never read any of the comics. But just from an outsider person, not like the full, Marvel fan, what I liked about Captain Marvel was the fact that it had this more like, I know it's not the same universe, but Spider-Man origin, where it was this ordinary kid, then he gets bitten by the spider. So Captain Marvel was this ordinary woman, Carol Danvers. She was human, and then this thing happened to her, and she became the superhero, which I contrast to Wonder Woman, who was already part of like this, specific race of Amazons or whatever they were. So I just wanted to find out what you thought about the difference between Captain Marvel and Wonder Woman, since you mentioned it.
Yeah, and you're right about that. And that is there. It's not that I don't think everything in the movie Captain Marvel failed. But matter of fact, the one really endearing moment was she has this kind of montage scene because her memory has been essentially erased. She has this kind of montage scene where she remembers all these moments in life where she failed and literally, physically fell down. And has in those moments found resiliency and the power of the human spirit and all that, and begins to pick herself up and keep going. And that's a universal theme. That's something that cuts deeper than any kind of ideology. And that I think is one of the most effective moments of the film. So it's not without its appeal. And like you, I love the kind of coming into these powers and what that means. I actually wish we had a lot more of that in Captain Marvel, because when we first see her in the movie, she's already got those powers, and we only see her come into her powers, in retrospect. The difference between her and a Wonder Woman is there's a question, I guess, which is the more fascinating story: someone who comes into their powers, via Spider-Man or Captain America, or someone who is empowered and then becomes disempowered. Wonder Woman you know, leaves Themyscira, this island where, you know, it's this tribe of Amazonian women who are all equal in power and remarkable there, but she's particularly in the movie empowered because she's got divine blood in her. But she leaves that world, comes to the normal world, enters into the normal world, and it just stands out. She becomes like a Superman character where her powers just absolutely eclipse and dwarf, you know, everyone else she's around. The deal is, though, she experiences a kind of disempowerment in that she has a strong ethic. She has a proclivity to violence because of her training, but a resistance to violence because of her virtue. And she only wants to, you know, exercise violence when absolutely needed against, you know, clear, blatant forms of evil. And she finds herself morally, emotionally, I would say compromised, but a morally, emotionally complicated because of her relationship with Chris Pine's character in the film, who becomes a love interest to her, and her just meeting normal people and seeing kind of the, just the ordinary goodness of humanity, which she's not been privy to. She's been secluded on this island. So she's not in a world anymore where she can just show her powers the way she always has in this Spartan society where her life consists of training. And that's about it. She has to act actually now sort of much in the same way. This is kind of the appeal of Superman. She has to restrict herself. She has to kind of learn regulation, emotional regulation, physical regulation. And she has to become a more nuanced character. And the big difference in terms of kind of the depictions of the feminist ideal in Wonder Woman versus Captain Marvel is Wonder Woman is surrounded by, if you remember the story where she's with this kind of rogue platoon who end up going behind enemy lines during World War I on this covert mission, she is surrounded by these men. She develops a strong love and affinity for, and she actually learns from them. She grows with them. She bonds with them. She has an endearing relationship with them. There's not, to my mind, there's not one endearing relationship in all of Captain Marvel. Even her relationship with Fury is sort of casual, acquaintance-like. They certainly kind of have an alliance at the end of the movie, but without any emotional heft to it. It just feels, again, I'll use the word, flat. So I think, and again, that's probably partly due to difference in quality of writing between the scripts, but I think Wonder Woman gives us a really nuanced, complex version of just humanity that plays itself into female-male relationships, whereas Captain Marvel lacks that, becomes almost a bit of a hammer, you know, to which everything's a nail.
Some of our listeners who are Marvel Universe film fans might be wondering how you see this particular movie, Captain Marvel, working in the larger story that Marvel is writing. And, of course, some of those fans will know that there is another Marvel movie coming out pretty soon called Endgame. And so I'm sure that's not the very end of all the Marvel films. But I'm assuming that Captain Marvel will be part of that film. So how do you see this particular movie working into the whole storyline of all the Marvel films?
Yeah, this has been planned for years. You know, Kevin Feige and MCU are very calculated. So this idea of unveiling Captain Marvel right before Endgame, this has been a calculated move and in the works for a long time. It's really clear that Captain Marvel is kind of the ace in the hole for the Avengers. Everyone will have seen the really, really well done Infinity War, where, you know, Thanos, this arc villain, or this arch villain, he just flattens everybody, and they're without an answer. So we've had some movies between Infinity War and the upcoming Endgame, but it's really clear that the MCU has wanted to save Captain Marvel for that penultimate film before Endgame, because she's going to be the difference maker, and she's the one that's going to tip the balance of power. She is, both in the comics and definitely what they're doing in the films, one of the most powerful superheroes in of all the Marvel Universe. Seems to be she's going to be, as I mentioned before, the most powerful on the side of good. So they're bringing her in to level the playing field. You know, what they're going to do with her, particularly in the hands, I'm really curious to see what she's going to be in the hands of different directors like the Russo brothers, who are directing Infinity War, and they've done a couple of Captain America movies, and they're going to do Endgame. I'm looking forward to what they'll do with her. But she's going to be, I think, after Endgame, because Endgame is going to conclude a now decade-plus chapter. You know, several phases now of the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's been said pretty explicitly that Captain Marvel is going to be the leader of the Avengers. I mean, she's going to probably going to have Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, and those guys rotating off, and Brie Larson, Benedict Cumberbatch, you know, other new characters are going to kind of take the helm. But I think at the head of that new phase and several phases will probably be Brie Larson. So she's going to emerge from Endgame. I think her character is going to emerge from Endgame as the leader of the Avengers, and you know, we'll probably have three or four independent films following this one. Definitely, given the success of this one, we'll be seeing her for a while.
So I just want to let listeners know, Corey just mentioned the actor Benedict Cumberbatch, and he plays the Marvel character Doctor Strange. And we do have on our website, equip.org, a podcast about Doctor Strange, as well as a film review, which is available free online at our website. So, you know, you talked about some of the weaknesses, the clunky dialogue, the acting that you didn't think was up to par, and some of the themes. But as a superhero movie, do you think that Captain Marvel got anything right? Was there anything that you thought it did well? And again, my main thing about Captain Marvel that I liked, that I thought would be fun, especially for girls, you know, littler girls, was to see this origin story of this, you know, like it's always been boys that have had this kind of origin story, or there's always been male characters. And then now here's a female character, with the exception of Wonder Woman. Of course, we talked about that. And I wouldn't describe myself. In fact, I would not describe myself as a feminist in any way. I just feel that that was something fun at the movies. You like to see characters that you can relate to, just like you like to read books, you know, and as a kid, and read different books with characters that you relate to, and so that are your same gender. And so that's what I did appreciate about this movie. But I want to know if you thought that anything stood out that, you know, that it did well.
Yeah. And I do think you pointed out something that's really important there. It seems to be the consensus that, you know, female viewers of this film and male viewers of this film are having somewhat different experiences. I was talking to somebody on Facebook about this. I can't presume to know what it's like to be a female, that, you know, end of sentence, period, right? But definitely a female viewer resonating with some of these themes. Probably the same way that the Captain America movie, the first Captain America movie, the first Avenger, resonates with me more deeply than any other. There's elements of his character and story that just, if not true for my life, I want to be true for my life, or feel very desirable. And I would imagine that that's exactly the appeal and the experience that female viewers are having with Captain Marvel. And I'm really happy about that. I think that's great and needed. I also think it gets right. There's some basic touch points that, you know, kind of hero's journey stuff, that monomyth notion of a hero kind of leaving the known, entering the unknown, going through a kind of death or defeat experience, and then emerging transformed. If those things aren't present in a hero film, the movie's going to fall flat. It's just, I mean, Disney has made itself on the hero's journey. This movie does that. I don't think it does it nearly as well as even some other heroes you mentioned, like Spider-Man, who does it. That the whole Spider-Man story does that monomyth really, really, really well. This movie does do that, and I think it's not totally lacking in that area. Also, every superhero movie has to have clear depictions of good and evil. This movie sort of contorts that a bit with what it does with the Skrulls, and that was actually a point of critique I've had between the comics and this film. I think it really got the Skrulls wrong. But apart from the Skrulls, there is a threat, and there is a good that fights against that threat. That's got to be there. That sounds really basic, but those archetypes have to be there. Captain Marvel does that. And I think she's not totally unlikable as a character. Not to me. I know some people really, really like her as a character. I did not, but I don't think she's totally unlikable. I think there's a fair amount of humor. I think this is actually one of Samuel Jackson carried the film. I think he is endearing in this movie. We get a side of Nick Fury we haven't gotten before. I don't like some of the moves they made with him. There's a couple really tasteless moments involving Nick Fury that seems really out of character, and I wish they hadn't added to in the film there. But it's got its humor, and more than anything, it definitely, I think the plot is fairly low staked. I don't think it's an essential plot for what they're doing with the MCU, But it does set us up for, there's, you know, every Marvel movie has a mid-credit scene at the end of the film. This movie is no exception. And this end-credit scene or mid-credit scene, there's always a mid-credit scene and end-credit scene. This mid-credit scene is really consequential for Endgame. So I think it, you know, does enough to propel the larger Marvel narrative. And again, it's just, you know, generally speaking, I think it is an enjoyable film. So I was happy to see it, and I'll see it again.
I want our listeners to know that one of the characters, Nick Fury, who is played by Samuel L. Jackson, it is kind of a little bit of not a full origin story, but you kind of get an idea of some things about his character, as well as there's kind of some crossover with characters from their TV series. One of the actors from the Marvel TV series is in this one. And then I feel like there was a little nod, I won't say what it is, to Cats and Men in Black, the film Men in Black. And also, I would say that I agree with you that there are some more contemporary themes that probably aren't in the comic books with the alien race, the Skrulls that you mentioned, but we won't get into that. I'll have everyone read the review on our website to find out a little bit more about what Corey thinks about that. But I just want to ask you specifically about religious themes in the film. There are some viewers who have felt that the film was anti-Christian. I don't know that I came away with that specifically, but what do you think Christians should look for in this movie, and how should Christian parents talk to their kids if their kids go and see this movie? Because I think this movie is appealing to a lot of kids of a wide variety of ages, some even smaller elementary school kids. So how should parents talk about some of the religious themes in the film?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the movie, it is subtle in its depictions of religion or religious authority. I don't think on the whole it's very positive toward religious authority, but I don't think it's overtly, you know, pejorative or negative either. It's kind of a-religious. I will say there is a stand-in deity, a Kree deity. You know, Kree's this race that supposedly Captain Marvel, Yon-Rogg is a Kree, and Ronan, another character, is a Kree, and supposedly, you know, her name is Vers. Before she realizes her name is really Carol Danvers, she thinks she's a Kree. But anyway, the Kree have this deity called the Supreme Intelligence, and it's a very it seems to be one being, but a being that manifests itself very relativistically. Whatever it is you most admire, that's the form the Supreme Intelligence takes. So there is a hierarchical system of ontology or being there. The theme or the bit of the film that makes it, if anything does, anti-religious or, you know, somewhat hostile to any faith, not just Christianity, is that part of her coming into herself and part of her female empowerment, again, this is what I think is so heavy-handed about the movie, is any form of authority over her, she has to topple. She can't exist under no authority, it seems. So a lot of her coming into herself is her resisting and then ultimately destroying the Supreme Intelligence, which is, for all intents and purposes, the movie's only deity. So, you know, there's no commentary on any kind of Christian faith in the film or anything like that. But the stand-in for a faith in the film is a negative force and a force to be overthrown. So, you know, Christian parents should probably be aware of that. That should probably be a point of conversation that, hey, this is not all that fair depiction of what religious authority is or should be. And that, you know, for Christians, we believe that we come into ourselves in full empowerment in our faith, not despite our faith or at odds with our faith, that it's knowing our Maker, and particularly being in relationship with our Maker through Christ, that allows us to come into full selfhood. We don't have to topple or fight against our deity to be ourselves, which is a thoroughly idolatrous and hedonistic idea. So that's another reason I thought the movie didn't work, is Marvel's been generally very, very friendly. Think about some of Captain Marvel's lines and the Asgardians. They've been very, Marvel films have been very open to the idea of the supernatural or the various deities, the issues of faith and things like that. It's never been overtly closed to those things. This movie, though, seems to take a shot at religious authority and doesn't seem to be around flattering in its depiction. So that's one thing I think Christian parents should be aware of.
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid fire questions for Corey. So, Corey, sweet tea or unsweet tea?
I'm from the South, so sweet tea.
What's one of your most used or favorite websites?
Oh, gosh, YouTube.
I love that website as well. Call or text?
I think text. I wish I were more of a call guy. Text annoys me, but I definitely text more.
Introvert or extrovert?
I'm an introvert.
And what is your favorite Marvel Universe film so far?
It's a tie between the first Avenger, Captain America, and Doctor Strange. Love Doctor Strange.
Well, thanks for being on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest was Dr. Corey Latta, and Corey has written a film review about the new Marvel Universe film, Captain Marvel, and his review is called Something to Prove, Why Captain Marvel Just Doesn't Work, and it's available right now free online at our website, equip.org. We invite you to subscribe to our print magazine, The Christian Research Journal. A subscription is $33.50, and to subscribe online, visit equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Anagraph, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Anagraph, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.